feel the same way too. Worries, worries pile up on my head.
Good morning, Fairbanks. This is Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting and filling in for David Pruse. You're listening to 660 AM KFAR Problem Corner. Today in the studio, we have Jeff Jacobson. Thank you for being here with us. You are currently Mayor Pro Tem for the city of North Pole. And then for your day job, you are Director of Public Works for the city of Fairbanks. Is that right?
That's correct. Thank you.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell us about yourselves? I know you've been on the radio here, but for the folks listening, when I asked Jeff to come on the radio here, he said, is it over on 1st and 2nd Avenue? And those of you guys who know where the studio is, it hasn't been there for a long, long time, maybe 5 years, 10 years.
So it's been well, but thank you for inviting me to be on the show. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born in Palmer during the territorial days. That kind of dates me a little bit. We moved to Ketchikan when the Alaska Marine Highway Ferry System started up, and my dad worked on that ferry system. Went to grades 1st through 8th, and then we moved to Fairbanks, went to, started going to 9th grade at Ryan Middle School at that time, because during the pipeline days, the school population was so great, Lathrop couldn't have all four grades there. So 7th, 8th, 9th was at Ryan, and then I went to Lathrop for my 10th, 11th, and 12th year. As a senior, we went into the split shifting because, again, the school population had just exploded, so they were trying to build West Valley, and that opened after we graduated.
So Lathrop got to serve as two high schools effectively.
Correct.
One building.
In one building. We started very early, a little bit after 7, and got off at around 12:30.
All right, now before we go any further, I need to make one little disclosure just because of part of one of my side things that I do. As you know, I'm on the Borough Assembly, and so when I make really public comments, I need to disclose that these are my personal opinions. If I happen to say anything opinionated, they're not necessarily representative of the body I serve on. So I just want to make that clear. But back to you, you're our guest here today. I'm interested. So I've heard stories that part of the reason why we went to split shift in high schools was because rental prices and home values went up so much that you couldn't go work for a regular diner or, you know, food restaurant as a waiter or waitress or even a manager and afford to pay your rent. You would go broke because that's just how crazy it was. And I was told part of the reason for the split shift was so that I got some sound folks here adjusting the mic here. That's why there's a little interruption there. But I was told some of the reason for this was so high school students could run all the restaurants in town. Is that true?
Well, I know I did work at the steak pit as a dishwasher during my high school days, so that could be partially true. But I remember those days that people were renting a tent in someone's yard for $600 a month. That's because of how tight housing was. You waited up to 1 to 2 years to get a telephone installed at your address because MUS did not have the equipment and it took them so long to get it in place. It was crazy days. You never knew what you would encounter walking downtown Fairbanks. You saw everything that there is in
society. $600 for a tent. Now, was this like a nice tent, like a platform tent, or are we talking like a regular backpacking tent?
We're talking about a tent. Basic.
So once you killed off all the mosquitoes inside, it would say de-mosquitoed, and it'd be hopefully waterproof, and that's about it.
Yeah, those were interesting days, and Fairbanks did a lot of growing and expanding, and I think we're a better place for it. We had to make some really tough decisions. Splitting school at Lathrop was one way for the school district to be able to construct a second one during that very crunch of influx of workers and rising costs.
So you graduate. What year did you graduate?
I graduated in 1975.
1975. Okay, so that's why you had split shift just your last year.
Correct.
So the craziness of the pipeline construction era was just hitting your last year. So you graduate into this. I mean, that means that you could have gotten a high-paying job, I'm assuming, right on the pipeline. There would have been so many opportunities. But what did you do? I actually don't know if you went. I know you went to school, but what happened first?
I actually worked as a pipeline operator, telephone operator. So if you could imagine back then, the telephone operator with a set of headphones on, and they have these plugs that they would plug into different holes. And I would connect the calls between the different camps and also the workers calling home. And that was my summer job right after high school, was to be an operator in the old MUS telephone building on Fifth Avenue.
And I'm going to guess you made more than $600 a week.
I made enough to go on a summer trip with my graduating buddy, Robert, Bob Shevchek. So we spent the rest of the summer touring Europe on Eurotrain and bicycles.
Oh, Mr. Shevchek. I served with him on the board of directors in Interior Gas Utility. Now I'm starting to see everything's coming together here. It's starting to make sense. Okay.
Connecting the dots.
All right. So you're both part of that same class, and okay, so you got that job, and no, I was just asking, just, you know, I find, money fascinating, $600 a month for a tent. That would be fairly absurd today, but that's even more absurd in 1975, because $600 was probably the equivalent of, you know, I'm not doing any calculations here, but shooting from the hip, maybe $2,000 a month in today's dollars. That's quite a lot of money just for a place to get in your sleeping bag, you know?
Right.
So I'd imagine more folks today would be buying a van and parking in a parking lot somewhere and, you know, trying to find a quiet campsite, whatever. But
you had a lot of interesting construction going on, and I think now as a community we're suffering from that, because as the military is needing more housing, the housing that's available, is a lot of it is substandard because of the rush to build housing. During that time period, there wasn't a lot of codes enforcement inspections, and so people are, over the years, have had to make a lot of improvements, but some of those properties have a long ways to go still.
Okay. Well, so where do you end up going to college?
I actually went to UAF. I got my Bachelor's of Education degree there. After I graduated from UAF, I went back to the post office and worked again as a mail sorter. I'd worked there 2 years before to earn enough money to pay to go to college. Then I got my first job teaching for the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District in 1984 at North Pole Middle School, which was a brand new concept for our district. It was the first middle school to have 6th, 7th, and 8th grade in that location. And part of that was, again, the elementary schools were overcrowded, so they pulled out the 6th grade out of each one of the North Pole elementary schools to put them at middle school. We remained that arrangement to this day. I taught there for 27 years, 6th grade. It was an incredible career opportunity, and I still run into a lot of former students and children of my former students, and that dates me a bit. In fact, I've got a few of my former students working with me at Public Works.
That's got to be a good experience. So you also got a master's degree or two?
I did. I got a master's degree in curriculum and instructional science, which was basically a way to develop a curriculum for the school district and do improvements in lesson plans. And then towards the end of my career, I decided that I didn't want to be a burned out teacher, but I still wanted to be involved in education, so I went for a master's degree in educational leadership. And so I was just about ready to graduate with that when a different opportunity knocked on my door, and that was a phone call from Luke Hopkins, the newly elected borough mayor, who asked me to consider to come work for him as the chief of staff for the borough, which Bob Shevchek, again, was the chief of staff at that time and was leaving that position and had recommended my name to possibly be a candidate for that position.
Okay, and you're listening to KFAR, Problem Corner, 660 AM. If you'd like to call in after the break, you can call in at 458-8255.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fish on! The Valdez Fishing Report is brought to you proudly by Frontier Outfitters. Drop in for a visit to their extensive fishing department. From rods to reels, lures to lines, you'll see fresh and saltwater as well as fly fishing tackle for every game fish in Alaska. Stock up on supplies for your Alaskan-sized summer of fun. Coolers to camping gear, Frontier Outfitters is your first stop to making your next outdoor adventure a success. Your store for the outdoors, Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound.
Lori Prox here with LaVon Basinger of Fairbanks on a boat called the Fixed Income. I love that name. Reeled in a 14.54-pound silver salmon. It was the last fish of the day. When you brought that in, at what point did you realize this could be a derby contender?
Well, I think really not until we were removing the fish from the cooler and putting them in our fish trailer to wheel them, you know, to the cleaning station. My husband cleans the fish too, you know, and that's when I saw that it looked way bigger than the other fish in the cooler. And then when, after he'd put it in the pail and suggested that I carry it up there, and I was changing arms, you know, from one arm to the other arm of carrying the pail with the fish in it, because he just weighed a lot more. Because a few days ago I had taken up an 8.96, and then that same week, a few days later, there was an 8.981, so this one felt much, much heavier than those two.
Go fishing, Valdez! Easy Freeze is open 5:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. daily. They can book your fishing charter and blast freeze and vacuum pack your fish. Going out on a private boat? Come get your bait and ice. Easy Freeze can process your catch, too. They've got a variety of seafood for sale at their shop on Chittenah Drive, and if you have special requests for pickups or drop-offs, they'll do their best to accommodate. Easy Freeze!
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
KFAR weather.
Daytime highs approaching 58. Today, under cloudy skies with scattered rain showers likely. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast skies tonight. Scattered rain showers likely. Lows around 46. Chance for scattered showers again tomorrow, 63. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Problem Corner. Our call in line is 458-8255. This is Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting for David Pruse. Mr. Jeff Jacobson is in the studio with us. He is currently the mayor pro tem of North Pole, and we're actually about to segue into that. We were just talking about your first chief of staff job for the borough.
Yes.
And how did that go? You did that for what, 6 years or three years or what?
Just about 6 years, just shy of 6 years, from 2010 to end of 2015, before I switched jobs again and was the chief of staff at the city of Fairbanks in 2016, and then a transition to the City of Fairbanks Public Works Director. But during that interim time, as far as my political career, where that started in 1993. There was a city council election, and being someone who likes to work in the community and make things better, that I thought that was a good opportunity to kind of help give back to a community that gave me so much to me and my family as we raised our five kids there and who went to all the local schools. And so I didn't realize that that was going to be a whole nother career in public service. And so I was on the city council for about 17 years over the span of 1993 to 2010. During that interim, I was also the mayor of North Pole for about eight years, a little bit more than two full terms. There was a Mayor McCoy resigned in 1999, and I was mayor pro tem. And so upon his resignation, I was immediately sworn in as the mayor and served out the remainder of his term and then ran for two full 3-year terms.
So for North Pole, you have a council of six, you've got a mayor, and the mayor is the chairman of those meetings.
Yes, we have a strong form mayor of government, so he is a voting active member of the council and actually chairs it just like you are as the presiding officer of the assembly.
And then, so that means that amongst the council officers, is Mayor Pro Tem kind of the top, or is it just different? Are there multiple flavors of
We have Mayor Pro Tem, then we have Deputy Mayor Pro Tem, and then we have Deputy Mayor Pro Tem.
So if you're a Mayor Pro Tem, that means if the mayor can't show up, you're the chair.
Correct.
In a meeting, right? And if the mayor's incapacitated for any reason, you are the acting mayor.
Correct.
Not just for the chair of the meeting, but like you're the full-on mayor of the whole organization.
Yes.
And what's the status right now? Are you Mayor Pro Tem or are you acting mayor?
I am Mayor Pro Tem. Mayor Welch is running the meetings and is attending to the affairs of the city. There are times when he's out of town or has had health challenges, so I've conducted meetings on his behalf. He might be going out of town in September for some treatment, and during that time I will be acting mayor in his absence.
Okay, I probably need to give him a call. I didn't know what the current situation was, boots on the ground, whether you might be full mayor for a week and then you're kind of back to pro tem or how that was going.
And that would be the case.
It's going back and forth.
Yes, just it's a very fluid motion of what my responsibilities are depending on his availability and his needs.
So what's the current employee count? We usually call those FTE counts when we're looking at budget bugs for North Pole.
We have 45 full-time positions, and we hire some temporary positions for our public works crew, and then also we have part-time and volunteer fire department staff, probably another 20-plus employees.
And then do you happen to know what Fairbanks is at for total employee count, FTE count?
I want to say it's around 200 or under 200. I know at Public Works we have 40 full-time positions, and then during our snow removal we hire up to 35 temporary workers.
Could you repeat that, the base number?
We have 40 full-time employees, year-round employees, and then during the winter snow season we hire up to 35 temporary workers.
At least during winter, I would think that makes you the biggest department of the city by employee count, wouldn't it? Bigger than the police, bigger than fire?
Correct.
Okay. So that's an important director role there, keeping Fairbanks together. So I need to call you when I'm not happy with my street and how it's been plowed. Is that right?
If you live within the city limits and it's not a road maintained by the state of Alaska.
Important distinction, however, I do live in the city. And yes, that's a different issue, the sheer amount of, well, yes, there are over 100 road service areas that have varying levels of plowing services. Then there are state roads that are, including in the city, some of the city roads are really state roads like Airport Way, right?
Correct.
What are the biggest ones in the city that the state does?
Airport Way, they do College Road, University Avenue, Steese Expressway, Johansson Expressway, Mitchell Expressway, and then pretty much all the other roads the city has over time taken the maintenance responsibility in lieu of paying matching funds for road improvements. It was a process that for many years the council saved money by taking over the road responsibilities. So that put a heavier burden on the public works department than we had the staffing and equipment to do. So we're now playing catch up.
Okay, so I'm just thinking here. I actually have one other comp. There's also roads that nobody takes care of officially.
Correct.
A neighbor, if we're going outside of the Fairbanks, in between road service areas, there's actually areas where there are physical roads, and it's just the benevolent neighbor is the one who comes out with his plow truck and plows it out or grades it or whatever, and that's our patchwork. That's our road system here in the borough. It's rather interesting.
And sometimes rather unfortunate, because with some of the new neighborhoods being developed, they are not able to form their own independent road service area, they have to be annexed in to an adjoining road service area, which means that both groups of property owners have to agree to that. And there have been very few successful marriages, you might say, of new road service areas going into existing ones.
Well, and I can tell you from experience from my 6 years on the assembly, you know, we vote to kind of ratify these elections afterwards. And just from memory, I'm really confident in this statement. The number one reason why, let's say, an area that has no road service area fails to get annexed into a neighboring road service area is because nobody shows up to vote. And one of the two groups, because they both have to affirmatively say, yes, we want this, and you just get zero votes sometimes, and then it's done. Usually, the borough will go out and ask if they want a redo election the next year, but it depends on the circumstances. But that's sad, because if people aren't interested enough to even say, you know, it's not so sad if they want to come out and say, no, we don't want this, and it's like, okay, then you know.
So. Correct. And the other thing is that existing established road service areas have spent a lot of money building up their road systems. And so when you have a new neighborhood come in, those roads may not be up to the same standard. So there's going to be an increased burden, financial burden on the original road service area property owners to kind of build up those other roads. So that's somewhat of the hesitancy there of annexing new neighborhoods into existing road service areas.
So I wanted to see if you remember. I did look at these numbers, but this was like a week ago, and it wasn't specifically prepped for this. But what was the borough government, what was its FTE count or employee count back when you were chief of staff? And I know this was over several years, but about, I know it didn't change drastically over 6 years.
I want to say 400.
About 400. Okay. And maybe the numbers I was looking at was even a little before you started there, because I remember not that long ago, 10, 15 years ago, I think they were at maybe 380 or so. And then it's just an interesting trend. I don't know if you have any comment on it, but today it's going to be more in the 410 to 420 range. And if you go back about 10 to 15 years ago, the borough population was just over 100,000, maybe 101, 102, somewhere in there. And today, if you look at the most modern estimates, they actually peg us closer to 95, 96. And so I just find it very interesting that while the borough population has declined about 5% over that time period, the borough government staff count, rather than declining 5%, has gone up 10, 15%. And that just is an interesting trend, and certainly not sustainable long term. Well, I don't know if you got any comment.
Well, part of that is that when you have long-term employees who retire after 20, 30, 40 years, it's when you hire their replacement, they're not as efficient and as knowledgeable to get the job done. And so oftentimes what that one person was doing now takes two or three people to do, even trying to catch up. We find that same thing at the city of Fairbanks. We have a very, during that time period where we, over 30 years, we took over 24 state-maintained roads, and my employee count went up one person in that 30 years. So we've had to be very creative to stretch out our resources, our equipment, our scheduling, but it's come to the point now that we've had to increase the number of employees because just the level of work that is required and the skill level and the pool of laborers that are out there is requiring us to hire more people to get the same amount of work done.
I want to finish that thought. We'll go to the break as soon as you're done there. Okay, thank you. Fairbanks, you're listening to KFAR Problem Corner, 660 AM. This is Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting for David Pruz. Da 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 da
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
More flash flooding as well as mud and rock slides are expected in the Los Angeles area after a post-tropical cyclone Hillary left the region. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass.
We will approach our recovery with the same intensity as we approached our preparation. As skies clear, the Department of Water and Power crews have already mobilized to return power to Angelinos.
Hillary was the first tropical storm to hit Southern California in more than 80 years. President Biden and the First Lady will be meeting with survivors of the deadly Maui wildfires later today.
President Biden also gets a chance to be briefed on the search and recovery efforts and pay respects, a White House official says, to the lives lost.
Fox's Jared Halpern. The fires are blamed for at least 114 deaths, a number officials say is expected to rise as search efforts continue. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Minor reports that Alaska Attorney General Treg Taylor filed a lawsuit last week alleging widespread fraud in the ATM industry. According to a civil complaint filed in the 3rd Judicial District at Anchorage, automated teller machines contain a safe filled with cash by the ATM owners. When a customer withdraws cash from the ATM, funds equal to the withdrawn amount plus fees and surcharges are transferred out of the customer's bank account. The ATM owner is later reimbursed for the amount of withdrawn cash. ATM owners typically receive daily cash settlements and their share of surcharge settlements equal to the withdrawn cash and surcharges from the previous business days deposited in their bank account. James Francis Denias sells ATMs to small businesses, nonprofits, and corporations and connects those ATMs with payment processing services, according to the complaint. Dana said that numerous lawsuits the attorney general cited in the civil complaint have already been resolved and he is looking to resolve the other matters. He also told the Newsminer that he disagrees with
streaming
the premises.
So how's your memory? Can you remember this name? It's Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. It's pretty simple, but it's a name you want to be familiar with. You see, good plumbers who can get to your problem quickly and do a top quality job fixing it all at a reasonable price. Well, let's simply say they're scarce. Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical is quick to the problem, and they're quick to the solution. And when you have no heat, or you have a bad plumbing leak, your HVAC isn't working, or your pipes are frozen, you want your problem fixed. So who do you call? I told you to remember the name. It's Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. Boilers and water heaters, snow melt systems, of course, drain cleaning. They also own Victory Drains. And you'd be surprised how much more. So look, you don't have to try to remember the phone number. Just remember the name and look it up from there. One more time now. Say it with me. Living Waters. Right. Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. Okay. Well done.
I wanted to let you know we had a terrific dinner last night at Silver Gulch.
Silver Gulch? I thought they were closed.
They have been open since last October, with dinner Wednesday to Sunday starting at 4. Last night was our second visit.
Oh, I always love their food. Do they still serve the beer cheese soup?
Yes, and a lot of our longtime favorites as well. Last night, I tried the Brick Oven Club, and it was so good. I also tasted the miso steak. Perfection.
We used to love going there. I can't wait to go back.
Silver Gulch. Yes, we are open. In Historic Fox, Wednesday to Sunday from 4 p.m.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Good morning. This is Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting in for David Pruz, Problem Corner, KFAR 660 AM. The call-in number is 458-8255. Again, that's 458-8255. Feel free to call into the program and we'll at least give you a fair shake. And who knows, might start a whole new conversation. But at any rate, you know, during the break, we were just kind of having our own little side conversation a little bit about taxes. You know, taxes, that's always a favorite American pastime to talk about, right? And so, Mr. Jacobson, you were chief of staff, I think, while there was a sort of, I'd call it a landmark tax deal, if you will, that was brokered between the borough, the city of Valdez, and the North Slope Borough, and it had to do with property taxes over the one property owner that goes through all three of those entities, which would be TAPS, right? The pipeline. Alyeska.
Correct.
Now, I wasn't personally paying close attention. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what went down and who the players were and what the outcome was? And this was like 2012 or I don't remember the year, 2010?
Probably 2012. For many years, the Alyeska Corporation would contest the amount of the valuation of their properties, and it was up to the boroughs to contest and argue that in court. And Renee Broker was the borough attorney, and she was consistently able to prove that their valuations were lower, that they had lowered their valuations too much, and so they were not paying their fair share of property tax. She was like one person in the room against an army of pipeline attorneys there, you can imagine, so the odds were against her, but she had a winning argument, and the statistics and the information were on our side. But that takes a lot of time and effort to do that. So I think shortly after I left the borough, they came up with an agreement between the three borough governments and the oil companies that they would agree on a long-term tax rate, so they wouldn't have to be going to court every 2 to 3 years and fight the valuation question.
Okay, so we can think about this in simple terms. Well, just the first fact is that the pipeline is the biggest single taxpayer in the borough. Most years, the taxes that they pay are about 10% of the total property taxes that the borough receives. And then I know that number goes up dramatically as a percent for Valdez because they have the port there in addition to their few miles of pipeline, and the port facility is basically part of TAPS. And then on the North Slope, they have all of the infrastructure, even that's outside of the pipeline, but they do have all of that initial pipeline. And then they also have, well, if you drive up the Dalton Highway, you go to basically about the last tree. As soon as you hit Treeline, it's all North Slope Borough, so they have an awful lot of miles of pipeline there. But at any rate, I guess basically what you're saying is, on a small scale, imagine there's a homeowner who has a million-dollar house, you know, one of the nicest houses in the whole area, period. And they somehow convince the assessor, oh, no, this is not a million-dollar house. This is a half-million-dollar house. So the official borough assessment's a $500,000. And you're basically saying, well, that guy is just not paying the taxes that the property is supposed to.
Correct.
And so you're saying that's what Alyeska was somehow, they were being creative and they were somehow getting their assessed value lower than what it really should have been with a fair valuation.
It wasn't so much that they were getting their assessed valuation lower, they were trying to get it lowered by saying that it had lost value, that it wasn't operating to its fullest extent, that the wear and tear and the operating costs should be deducted from it at a higher rate of depreciation. And so
Renee, and what was the borough's position? Was it more of a replacement value argument, or was it more of the sort of business perspective, like cash flow basis, or what?
I couldn't really answer that. I wasn't involved to that detail with the borough's argument.
Yeah, well, I know when it comes to houses, the borough's not assessing a house necessarily based off of its pure rental value. It's going to be more off of an estimate of market value, which that plays a role in, but, you know, replacement value is a big role. What are the comparable properties? It's a big role, too. So,
well, everyone likes to sell their house at the highest value, but they like to pay their taxes at the lowest valuation, and that's just human nature. And there's going to be a built-in conflict then between the two entities who are paying the taxes or not wanting to pay the taxes.
So the conflict it was basically totally rational, predictable that this sort of thing is likely to happen. So Alyeska was taking, its logical position was tax us less. And then the borough was like, wait a second, no, we want to make sure everyone pays a fair tax rate compared to their assets.
Because it was shifting, it would have to shift then to the local borough residents to make up that difference with higher property taxes just to sustain the schools and the infrastructure that the borough maintains. And so it was an argument that everyone pays their fair share and we don't burden the local homeowner, business owner, property owners.
I guess that is the bottom line. Yeah, that's it. The more Alyeska pays, the less we pay on our houses.
Correct.
And you could say the same right now. At that time, yes, Fort Knox was in existence. It would have been a very young mine, probably within its first 10 years. And it's the number two probably was as well when you were chief of staff, the number two property taxpayer. I don't think that much far behind Alyeska, actually. I think they're pretty close in scale. We have a caller. And if anyone else would like to call, that number is 458-8255. And let's hear. Hello, you are on KFAR. This is Aaron Lojeski. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
What's your name?
My name is Mike.
Mike, good to have you on.
Thank you. Hey, I'm just listening to this conversation about property tax. I've lived here 43 years, built a lot of houses and a lot of subdivisions, and paid a lot of property taxes over that period of time. And I just recently sold a house just because it was costing me $15,000 a year for property taxes on one house. And I keep hearing this term, fair share. And I just don't understand how we can be so expensive for property taxes and put all of that burden of the borough operations on the property owners. That's the key word there, property owners, who people that have committed to the community and bought property here in the community. And yet, there are a lot of people that don't pay anything. And I'm just wondering how that equates to fair share. I mean, I see people using the dumpster. I see people going to the schools. All of the fire services and all the rest of it. But it just seems like we saddle the property owners with the bill.
Mike, you're right. And to Jeff, I'm sure it was the same when you were there. I don't think the system's fundamentally changed. Is that the majority of the borough's revenue does come directly from property owners, the right. vast majority. We're talking 80-90%.
Now, just the opposite is true in North Pole. We have a sales tax. So our property tax rate is very low, about 3.5 mils, and our sales tax is 5%. That captures a broader base of consumers who come into our city to use our services and also purchase goods. And that sales tax then is able to lower the cost of services that have to be paid through property taxes. And that's what has sustained our city growth over the years is the sales tax. And most recently, taxing on the internet sales within our city limits.
But to our caller's point, I suppose one of the answers would be for the borough, if it wanted to, it could adopt a model like North Pole. I'm personally not necessarily advocating for it, but that would shift some of that tax burden that's currently being carried by the landowner and put it on the consumer when they pay regular property taxes.
Diversify your income streams is what the model is.
Yeah, so that could be done. I would say this, that model probably works much better for North Pole than it would for the borough. And the reason is the city of North Pole is what, 2,000, 3,000 people?
About 2,300, 2,500.
And then you probably have 10 or 20,000 people who come into North Pole for their normal grocery shopping at that Safeway, for instance.
Absolutely. But also they send their kids to our school, drive on our streets, have accidents, have fires. We provide EMS ambulance services to all of the 99705 zip code. So even though our population is small and our geographic boundaries are small, we provide a lot of services for people that come into North Pole. Same thing with the city of Fairbanks, 40,000 people, 96,000 people in the borough, but a lot of people driving to town for work, for shopping, appointments.
And we're gonna go ahead and looks like, do we need to go to a break right now?
Yep.
We are going to a break. We'll be back shortly. And whoever's on the line trying to get in, we'll get to you after the break.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Count on Frontier Outfitters' extensive shooting department for what you need on your next hunt. Rifles and shotguns by Winchester, Remington, Browning, and more. Handguns by Smith & Wesson, Ruger, and many others. Ammunition and reloading supplies as well. Protect and transport your guns with cases by Pelican and gun boots by Colpin. Be on target with optics by Weaver, Bushnell, and Leopold. Your successful hunt begins with a trip to Frontier Outfitters. For Alaskan proven outdoor gear and clothing, trust Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle. Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected today with scattered rain showers likely. Daytime highs approaching 58. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tonight. Scattered rain showers likely. Lows level off around 46. Chance for scattered rain showers again tomorrow. Highs level off around 63. Overcast. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
This is Aaron Lojeski, KFAR, 660 AM, Problem Corner. And looks like the caller, we just lost you during the break, and you're back. Let's hear from you. Hello, you are on KFAR. This is Aaron Lojeski.
Yes, actually, you're the perfect person to ask this.
Yeah, go ahead.
When it comes to, so here's the thing. You got people who send their kids by choice to Monroe Catholic. Now, those are students that would have been in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And this equation, whether it's state or whether it's local, and I don't think the local school should be bailed out every time they overspend. But this comes back to one of my other points. The people who send their kids there should have whatever matching monies that whether it came from the state or you, the Fairbanks Assembly, I'm sorry, the North Star Borough Assembly, should augment or reduce the cost of those parents that are sending their children there. Whether it comes from you adjusting their mill rates or whether it comes from them, if the Fairbanks North Star schools got $8,000 per kid, then that money goes to Monroe Catholic to offset those parents' costs. Now, you guys approve giving them a whole bunch of money. I don't think you should ever do that. That's like having a drug addict in the family, and you're supporting their bad habits. So can you answer this question? Do you ever get to see line item budgets from the Fairbanks North Star Borough school system, or do they just tell you a number and you give it to them? I'll take the answer offline. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the question. Mr. Jacobson, if you want to pitch in, you're more than welcome to, but I'll start since I happen to be on the assembly at the moment. Again, it's just my opinion. The gentleman who's calling, he brings in a very good point. At least conceptually, it is a wonderful idea if the money can follow the student and help educate them wherever they go. That's a wonderful point. And the gentleman offered one suggestion of, well, if the money can't literally follow, maybe a tax break could follow the parent of someone going to Monroe or whatever private school. That's certainly an interesting idea. I can pretty confidently say this, that would require a change of state statute to do something like that. There are a number of property tax exemptions that the state allows. Some of them are not just allowed, but forced. The local borough must do them, and I'm sure you remember this as chief of staff, perhaps even better than I do. And then there are others that are opt-in. And so that would have to be added to the list of either forced property tax exemptions or at least optional ones for boroughs to do. And then, you know, just one other kind of comment is that the school district is a component entity of the borough. It is part of the borough. It does have its own independent board and administration that sets its policies and manages it, but the entity itself is part of the borough. Every year when we go through our audited financial statements, it is one of the big components of the borough with the Interior Gas Utility and the borough government directly itself. And so as a component entity of the borough assembly is provided with a report every year, high level, and this one's not an item, but is also provided with the paper copy of their budget. And the assembly does have the opportunity to go into great detail in it. Does the assembly do that? Probably not in great detail. That's my experience over the last 6 years.
Well, you mentioned earlier about the state constitution in providing education for its students. The other flip coin to that is that there are many unorganized boroughs throughout the state of Alaska with no tax base. And so the state of Alaska pays 100% of their school operating costs, whereas the organized boroughs have to contribute a significant portion to sustain their school system. So that's another unfairness in the system is if you're unorganized, all your bills are paid for you. If you're organized, you have to pick up a big tab, and that big tab falls on property owners, whether they're sending them to private schools or to public schools. So there's a lot of things that could be changed to level the playing field a little bit. The biggest concern is that we want to make sure that students are getting the best education available, whether it's a private or public school. And that's a balancing act of where those dollars go and how they're spent. It's a tough decision every year for the school district and also for the borough assembly to make those kind of cuts and decisions that affect the classroom experience.
But certainly a very good point the gentleman brought forth, that it would be great if money could follow the student, and that doesn't matter where you're going. You just have that level of that piece of the education pie backing them, and I don't think that's a bad idea. On the topic of taxes, a little borough assembly update. Again, personal opinion, not speaking on behalf of the assembly. We have a very interesting ordinance coming up on Thursday, and you're going to be welcome to comment on it, Mr. Jacobson. The ordinance has to do with who determines if a property is tax exempt or not, because it might be nonprofit use, might be religious or charity use or whatever. The current status is the borough assessor determines, and if you don't like that, you get to sue into state superior court, and of course a lawsuit can be rather expensive. Now if you're a property owner, and let's suppose you have a house that's assessed at $300,000 and you have solid evidence it's really a $200,000 house, you can go bring that solid evidence, sometimes directly to the assessor. The assessor will just fix it. But if the assessor is ornery and refuses, you can go to the Board of Equalization. You take your appeal to them, and then they'll go ahead and correct it for you. So there's an ordinance that says, okay, well, if the assessor screws up and puts the wrong tax status, the nonprofit can appeal and take it to the Board of Equalization rather than going directly to court. That's what this ordinance says. And I don't know if you have any comment on that or if you just want to stay out of borough politics.
Well, I think that would be a first good step where the burden isn't always placed on the person who's appealing their tax designation, where it's going to cost them a lot of money to do a lawsuit in the Superior Court. But the more properties that are exempted from taxes means that the burden of paying taxes and collecting the needed revenue falls on the remaining taxpayers and property owners. So it's a carefully balanced act that you have to go into this knowing both sides of the issues and how the unintended consequences of decisions, you might say.
Right. Sometimes we have to think about, do we want to fight over who's paying, or do we want to fight over how much are we collectively paying?
Correct.
To a specific North Pole question, do you have any update about the water lines and kind of what the city of North Pole is doing with providing water service? I know that's been a big issue over the years with the sulfalane issues and now PFAS issues as well.
Yes, we are fortunate that in the city of North Pole we have our own utility enterprise system. Water, we provide municipal water and sewer to most of our residents within our city limits. The refineries over a decade ago was discovered used sulfalane and it leaked into our water tables. And that plume has traveled somewhat northwesterly, going across the Richardson Highway down Badger Road. And so those wells were contaminated, and there was a lawsuit and an agreement made between the state and the refineries to expand the city water system to provide clean, uncontaminated water to those residents. And then shortly after that, at the other end of the city, Eielson Air Force Base used firefighting foam that contained PFAS and PFOS, and those contaminants leaked into the Moose Creek water table. And so, because we had an established municipal water system, we were able to extend the water system to those customers. And so what originally was a 600 water customer base in the city of North Pole is now closer to 1,700 because we're providing municipal water to those residents that can't use their own well water now.
So who paid for the expansion of those water lines?
The state and the refineries did for the sulfalane. The PFAS was the Department of Defense.
Okay, and so those are paid for, at least as far as the local utility, you know, that's owned by the city, as far as it's concerned, like they're owned outright. There's no recurring debt payment. They're not being amortized in that sort of way.
Correct. They do have to pay for their usage, their water bill, and I think there was a certain amount of credit given to each customer at the very beginning to ease into the cost of paying for water where they were instead using their well water and having a water softener and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, that's good. How long are those lines supposed to last? Are we talking 50 years or 100 years or, you know?
That's a good question because we are now facing that in our original city center of North Pole, those water mains were put in the 1970s. And so they're actually past their life expectancy.
50 years, okay.
And we are looking at a major major project to dig up those water lines and replace them with new water lines. They haven't failed yet, but they are at that point that any major break would be very difficult to repair due to the standard of all the other pipes in the ground trying to connect into something solid.
Now, of course, I live in the city, but if I was one of the North Pole utility customers, I would want to have a small component of my bill shaved off every month and then put into a savings account so that when the lines eventually wore out, you could just go ahead and take that pile of money and do the necessary repair. From my experience, the way most folks operate, though, is they end up with nothing saved. And then what they do is when they need those new lines, they go put a bond proposition out on the ballot and they get it financed over a 20, 30, 40, 50-year bond. And then the new bond payments, they go on to the rates of the new ratepayers for that utility. And I don't know, they both work technically, but I really prefer the save up cash and then pay for it. And so it sounds like you're telling me
And the city of North Pole has done both. We have put money aside over the years to do that. But the immensity of the project far strips out what we have put aside for that. So currently we have a proposition coming up in October for the voters to allow us to take out a revolving loan from the state of Alaska. They say it's a forgivable loan, so I'm not sure exactly what that term is. But that will allow us to start designing the new water system and then see what the actual costs are and hopefully get some grants funding instead of more loans and bond propositions.
So you don't have enough to pay for the scoping and design work just right now as the city of North Pole? And just for everyone who's listening out there, when you have a project, the first thing you do is scope. That's just saying, what do we want to do?
Right.
How big is this project? Then the design is actually getting those engineers in, and they start making really detailed plans that you can actually act on and start
building
off.
It's the design engineering aspect of it.
Yeah. So scoping isn't really that expensive, but the design work is a significant component. But it's not like half the project cost. From my memory, it's probably more like 5%, 10% sort of thing.
It's about, $700,000 loan that we're taking out. But what we're doing is also making sure that we keep that cash reserve for emergency repairs so that we can respond to those rather than completely deplete our savings account.
Okay, so North Pole's working on dealing with that. And you said this October, there's that question for North Pole voters as to whether they want to do, did you say it was a $700,000 potentially forgivable bond package to the state or revolving
loan, yes.
Loan from the state of Alaska. Is that through ADA or is that through a different department of the state or what?
I think it's ADEC.
ADEC. Okay. Well, we are about to close the program here. Do you have any final comments, Mr. Jacobson?
I just appreciate everyone who takes an interest in what is happening in local government, whether you're in the city of Fairbanks, city of North Pole, or in the borough, and also with the state. If you're not informed, if you don't speak up, your leaders don't know what the needs are and what things need to be changed.
All right. Well, this was KFAR Problem Corner. Aaron Lojeski guest hosting in for David Pruz. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening and joining us at the end of this morning.
Your station. This is KFAR Radio, Fairbanks, the heartbeat of Alaska.
DeSantis' defense. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis taking some heat for suggesting some Republicans are like listless vessels, wanting to follow whatever former President Trump says.